Chapter 58. The Rhineland Occupation. To Kerr's objections, Tardieu answered, "There are revolutionary sentiments in the Rhineland. We will train them. They have learned a lot during the war, principally that France is the bastion of democracy. The idea of such a bastion of democracy swallowing up Western Germany without the consent of its people was not without irony." Tardieu also tried to put to rest the fears that the occupation of Germany could lead to a revolt. To this we answer that the Rhinelanders are only concerned with their fear of taxes and Bolshevism. Tardieu, Peace, page 193. There again Tardieu did not fear irony. His government was just concluding a treaty with the Bolshevik dictatorship of Munich. As for the Rhinelanders' fear of taxes, Tardieu would exploit it by promising them exemption from war reparations if they went along with his policy. He enumerated further advantages: no draft registration, shipments of food, a customs union, and banking reforms. Despite these tempting offers in a time of famine and misery, the Rhinelanders did not show any inclination to rush to France. Tardieu did not convince the conference and ended his case unequivocally: "To ask us to renounce occupying Germany is as if we would ask England and the United States to sink all their war vessels. We refuse." Tardieu, Peace, page 193. Britain certainly could play the role of protector of people's rights to self-determination. The British had already helped themselves to 80% of the German fleet, and more than 1 million square miles of former German colonial territories. It was the height of British hypocrisy to object sanctimoniously to France's attempts to do likewise. Tardieu felt his claims were modest, compared to what the British had taken without the slightest discussion or debate. He presented his plan. The Rhine will mark Germany's western border. Germany will renounce sovereignty over all territories west of the Rhine. An Allied occupation force would control Kiel, Mannheim, Mainz, Koblenz, Cologne, and Dusseldorf as part of the definitive peace treaty. The territories on the left bank of the Rhine, with the exception of Alsace-Lorraine, will be transformed into one or several independent states. Tardieu, Peace, page 141. Wilson had just returned to the conference table after a quick visit to the United States. He immediately let his concern be known. "How can we forget that when we signed an armistice with Germany we took on certain definite commitments? If we accept the Clemenceau-Tardieu plan we will trample these commitments into the ground and will be in open conflict with the 14 points." Since Tardieu claimed his plan was only conceived to ensure French national security, Wilson thought if the United States would guarantee full protection to France perhaps Clemenceau and his backers would drop their expansionist plan. Wilson and Lloyd George proposed that the left bank of the Rhine will remain German and will not be occupied by an Allied force or a French one. Great Britain and the United States will give France the solemn undertaking to provide immediate military help in case of peril. Tardieu, Peace, page 196. Clemenceau decided to finesse himself out of this embarrassing offer. He would pretend to go along with apparent satisfaction. "We greet with the most sincere appreciation the undertaking you have offered us, and we wish to accept it." Wilson was all smiles until Clemenceau added, "But our acceptance will be on the condition that most of the guarantees we have asked be met and, to start, the occupation of Western Germany." Just as in the case of the Saarland, where elections would be postponed for 15 years, Clemenceau would occupy the Rhineland unofficially. It was legalistic legerdemain, which left Lloyd George and Wilson somewhat off balance. Tardieu pressed them to ratify their guarantees, knowing the American Senate would never go along with Wilson's magnanimous offer. He was right. Lloyd George used the Senate's refusal to take French leave, or, as Tardieu would say, an English leave filer à anglaise. Clemenceau was therefore free to occupy the Rhineland by default. He appeased Wilson's conscience by placing a time limit of 15 years on the occupation, but there again not without strings. "The occupation will last 15 years, but with the option of extending it if Germany reneges on its commitments or if the British and Americans fail to meet their guarantees." Tardieu, Peace, page 221. Tardieu insisted this demand be included in the Treaty of Versailles. Thus the least German infraction would give Clemenceau the excuse to send his forces farther east. This would happen the very next year, and again in 1923, in the Ruhr Basin. The British establishment felt it had been given a dose of its own medicine and looked for a way to defuse a situation it could not control. As early as May, 1919, wrote Tardieu, Lloyd George regretted acceding to our demands, which he thought would start another war. The British asked the French government to reduce their occupation time from 15 years to 18 months. Lloyd George admitted, we should never have accepted this long occupation. The whole project should be studied again. I accepted it, it's true, but since then I have convened the Imperial Cabinet 4 times and all the members agree I was wrong. By now Lloyd George thought the occupation would be useless because Germany had only 100,000 soldiers and Great Britain and the United States would stand by France in case of aggression. The occupation is illogical because it will be 50 or 60 years before Germany is dangerous again. Tardieu, Peace, page 217. Clemenceau would soon find himself overtaken by even more demanding elements within his own government, who wished nothing less than the creation of a Rhineland Republic, regardless of the consequences.